Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is lifemint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we discuss is about the GDP growth that has been pegged at 7% in the quarter ending December 2016, while the overall growth for financial year 2016-17 has been estimated at 7.1%. This is in stark contrast to various estimates, including the IMF's, which had expected economic growth to fall to 6% in the second half of the current fiscal year. And, you know, the 7% has sort of surprised economists and experts. So what explains this 7%? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it surprised economists and everyone else. But there are, like, two big things to notice about this, right? I mean, I think we increasingly live in a world where everyone sort of has a theory, and then if the facts come in which don't fit their theory, right, they question the facts, right? I mean, so I understand it is important to be skeptical about these numbers. Mm. One of the foreign wire services said India's numbers are now as dodgy as China's. We have huge issues with the new GDP series, right? I mean, we've written series of articles. Our people have actually had discussions with the statistics office, with those guys looking at our criticism and trying to explain. But I have a slightly different take. And I think a few of the theories that are floating around have mentioned this, but I don't think it's really registered completely. And the fact is, the timing of demonetization, it happened after the festive season when you see a spike. The fact that a lot of the impact is on the informal sectors, which are not captured in GDP. And I think that's probably one reason why the number came in at 7%. Mm. The second thing to note, and again, a lot of people have mentioned this, is that GDP is a year-on-year growth number. And obviously, the 2015-16 number was revised. And the 15-16 number was revised previously itself. And that revision obviously meant that we had growth this quarter. Where the dissonance comes in is the fact that in 2015-16, quarter one and quarter two had shown significant growth. And then quarter three, your revised numbers show that dip.
Right.
Which makes it seem like it's been taken down merely to make this quarter's numbers look good. And also the fact that a lot of the other indicators don't seem to bear out this GDP number. But I'm not overly cynical about it because I believe that there's the informal economy aspect that hasn't been taken into account. I believe that the spike ahead of the festive season could account for growth because things did look good in the festive season last year. Everyone did well in the festive season last year. And I also think the third aspect, which again is just coming July, it is the fact that inventories are high, right? And those inventories are at some level in the supply chain. So, of course, it could affect companies later on if sales don't pick up. So all these have to be taken into account. But 7% did surprise everyone. Does it mean demonetization has had no impact at all, as some people are claiming? I would disagree with that entirely.
Right.
I believe there has been significant short-term pain on account of demonetization, especially in the informal economy. But I also believe that the long-term impact of demonetization has to be seen. Various agencies, multilateral agencies, are now saying that it is not as significant.
Right.
Everyone can't become an economist, right? I mean, and after 8th November, I think that's the big problem. Everyone's become an economist. I think it requires serious economic research and study to see what the exact impact of demonetization will be, even on Q3, right? And I've heard various numbers which are presented. We'll have to really look at it.
Right. The next story we discuss is about Indian unicorns. Our story reports that Indian unicorns have an image problem after the funding slowdown and exodus of high-profile executives over the past year. Many are being seen as career graveyards by potential hires, according to headhunters. The story is very aptly titled Indian Unicorns Seen as Career Graveyards. So what do you think? Is this a temporary blip or are things going to look up for unicorns?
I think it depends on the companies to a large extent. But I'm not surprised at all by this fact, which we reported today. If you look at the track record of the big companies, the Flipkarts, the Olas, the Snapdeals, they all hired executives from large companies, from consulting firms, from consumer packaged goods companies, even from Silicon Valley, right? And then they all came back, promise of huge salaries, and huge. I mean, these are really huge salaries. These people were offered salaries that were on par with what they were earning, in some cases, salaries that were more.
Right.
And then they were offered stock. So the wealth creation opportunities, both from salary and stock, was huge. Attracted a lot of people. I'm not saying only it was just finance that attracted, the financial lure that attracted them. Also the fact that, you know, it was a new area, an opportunity to change the status quo. All of that worked. And then everyone landed up there. And then they found that many of these companies had perhaps had founders who had their own way of working and maybe didn't have as professional an organizational structure and as clear structures and processes as many of these people were used to. I think it requires a certain bent of mind to work in a startup. I think it requires a certain bent of mind to work in an Indian startup. I'm not sure that many of these people who made the transition had that bent of mind. So I wouldn't just blame the companies. I would also think that these executives didn't really look at these issues. So these startups will now increasingly have to look at fit, right? I mean, hiring for fit is extremely important. And I don't think some of the larger companies realized that quite some time back. But I don't think the startups have yet realized that you need to fit into a particular organization's way of doing things.
Culture.
I mean, we find it in our own small newsroom, don't we? I mean, we give people a lot of time to fit in, but then it's reasonably clear to me within a few months who is a good fit and who isn't. So, and even at the hiring stage, we increasingly look at fit rather, more than anything else. I think it's important.
Right. The next story we discuss is an opinion piece which says that Ambani's Reliance Jio should make an even bigger bet, like buying Paytm.
It was a good piece. It was a provocative piece. It was a gadfly, right? I mean, and those pieces are aimed to be insightfully provocative on the back of numbers, numerical analysis, and this piece was just that. It's a very interesting proposition because this is a company which has the money, which has the appetite, and it would give them a leg up in where they want to be.
Right.
While the piece is about Ambani, and I think it's interesting because Reliance is obviously trying to forge its way into the new economy on the strength of what it's done with its telco, right? I mean, Reliance Jio. But I think it's true for a lot of other established companies also that have the size, that have the borrowing power or the financial power to go out and make these huge acquisitions, right? And it is an easy way for these companies to get into the new economy. Like you the Walmart deal, the JD deal, right? I mean, the Walmart JD deal, interesting deal because I think it was a case of a large company with significant financial wherewithal using that money to get a head up in an area where it was in some ways a laggard. And I think it's a good strategy. If you have the money, why not put it to good use?
I
think this was a trick that many of India's software services companies missed, which is why now everyone is going on and on about buyback because buyback shares because you have so much money which you haven't put to good use, right?
But I think you also pointed to Paytm and not any other company because it's been a great beneficiary of demonetization.
But Paytm, and that is known. I mean, Paytm has really grown since demonetization. I mean, they've done very well, right?
Great. The next story we discuss is from Telecom itself, which is that the government is looking at making spectrum auction an annual event. And according to many people like Sunil Bharti Mittal, it is a progressive thought.
I think so too.
But do you think another round of spectrum auction makes sense or is it not a good idea?
I think finally, and this has not happened because of governmental action, it's happened largely because of competitive forces and market forces. You're seeing consolidation in the industry, which is great. Because I think the government was very rash in what it did when it allowed as many telcos as there could be. Mm. Because the first new telecom policy of 1999 envisaged only 3 plus the state-owned one, and that would have been a good number. Of course, it's a question on whether the state-owned one should even exist at this point in time, but be that as it may. The consolidation has happened. And I don't think you should have artificial restrictions. So I think irrespective of, as long as the process is transparent, as long as the process of allocation is transparent, and the Indian government has decided that the auction is the most transparent way of doing it.
Right.
I think it's not just spectrum, but even fuel, which is coal, mines for iron ore and other things, even banking licenses, which the RBI has already said will be on tap. I think everything, every one of these should be on tap because that is the way it is in a free, fair and open economy. Mm. As long as you have clear rules, as long as you have a free play of market forces and as long as you have a completely independent sector regulator and a very effective competition body, which is the Competition Commission in our case, I think you should just press ahead with all these things and not make these once in a 5-year kind of spectrum auction that everyone's waiting for and things like that. I think it should be on tap and between auctions in case someone wants telecom spectrum, I think they should just buy it at the rate decided on the previous auction. I think you need to have very clear rules for this. On tap, off the shelf, I think it's important to move there.
Great. Finally, we end with a preview of MTech. What is MTech? MTech is an event hosted by Mint and the MIT Technology Review. It is a platform where technology, business, and culture converge. It is being held on March 9th and 10th at the Pullman Hotel in New Delhi, and the broad themes for this time include digital life, cutting-edge technologies, machine learning, deep learning, computer vision, and a suite of other artificial intelligence technologies. So why don't you walk us through MTech and what it's about and what people can look forward to this time?
Yeah, this is the second year we're doing MTech in association with MIT Tech Review. I've said this before, you know, and I've written about this also previously. I think history will probably look back at our decade and say this is the decade of fundamental technological change.
Right.
I know that many people will think that I'm exaggerating, but you look at all the things that have happened. In the early part of this decade, artificial intelligence, which people had been speaking of since the middle of the 20th century, finally became a reality thanks to deep learning. And you look at the strides that have been made in that. It's huge. Robotics, significant strides. The gene editing, thanks to CRISPR, and CRISPR will be a hugely successful commercial thing a few years from now. And the impact it will have on longevity. You look at space travel. You're actually talking of commercial space travel, right? I mean, you're talking of colonizing other planets. I mean, the changes are huge. They're tremendously significant. And I think what we do in MTech, which is our annual conference, is to look at how companies can leverage these new technologies, how people can leverage these new technologies. It's all about working better and working smartly, living better and living smartly, playing better and playing smartly. So it's about this whole thing. It's about the impact that these technologies will have on work, on life, on play, and everything that's happening around us. Attached to that, what we also do is recognize innovators under 35.
Right.
And I think at some point in time, we should probably take the bar even lower, right? I mean, you should probably look at people under 30. We have a lot of young people in this country. Some of them are doing fundamentally good work, right? I mean, I was a judge last year and I'm a judge this year also. And I've looked at the quality of entries. I mean, it's uniformly good. It's uniformly high. And it's not just, we celebrate, in some ways, I think we celebrate the wrong heroes in this country, right? I mean, anyone who launches an e-commerce marketplace and gets a huge valuation becomes a hero in this country. And I think we ourselves are guilty of propagating this kind of culture to some extent by putting these guys, I mean, we use their pictures on page one and things like that. But when you look at a 28-year-old doing work in a fundamental science like chemistry and coming up with something interesting which has huge commercial applications and a huge impact on life or work, you realize what really matters and what doesn't. I think it's very important to build businesses, don't get me wrong. But I think what the innovators under 35, the opportunity it gives us is to really acknowledge work in pure science, in pure tech, right, and work which can have a significant impact going forward. So I'm looking forward to it.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.